He reached back into his training as a soldier, taking his fear and transforming it into anger to give him strength.
I am Darth Bane, Dark Lord of the Sith. I will survive, at any cost.
Far ahead, at the very limits of his rapidly fading vision, he saw another vehicle moving slowly across the other side of the battlefield. Settlers, scavengers, picking through the remains. He pointed the nose of his landcrawler at them, groaning with the effort required to simply turn the wheel. Reaching out with the force, he tried to touch the spirits of those who'd fallen at this site. Only a few months earlier, scores of beings had died here. He tried to drink in what remained of their tortured ends, hoping the agony of their final moments would bolster his own flagging power. But it wasn't enough. Their suffering was too distant. The echo of their screams too faint. Glancing up, he noticed that his vehicle had begun to veer off course, listing hard to one side as his grip on the wheel weakened. His arms were numb and tingling. They'd become almost completely unresponsive. He could feel his heart laboring with every beat. The front tread struck a large rock, and the land crawler suddenly turned over, dumping Bane out onto hard dirt and jagged stone. He tried to look up again to locate the people he'd seen in the distance, but the effort to raise his head was too much. Exhausted, his world went black. The heavy whoomp, whoomp, whoomp of a landcrawler's tread stirred him back to consciousness. The other vehicle was here. He doubted they would even see him. His body had fallen behind his tipped-over crawler, and they'd approached him from the other side. Even if they did, there was nothing they could do to save him now. Yet, there was something he could do to save himself. The engines cut out and he heard the sound of voices. Children's voices. Three young boys scampered down from the back of the landcrawler and began to hunt eagerly through the wreckage.
Mickey! Came the voice of their father, calling after one of his sons. Don't go too far! Look! One of the boys shouted. Look what I found!
The weak must serve the strong. That is the way of the dark side.
Wow! Is it real? Can I touch it? Let me see, Mickey, let me see.
Settle down, boys, the father said wearily. Let's take a look.
Bane listened to the crunching of his boots across the small stones as he approached.
I am strong. They are weak. They are nothing.
It's a lightsaber, father. But there's something weird about the handle. See? It's got a strange hook in it.
He felt the sudden fear that gripped the father's chest like a vice.
Survive at any cost.
Throw it away, Mickey, now!
Too late.
The lightsaber sprang to life in the boy's hand, spinning in the air and striking him dead on the spot. The father screamed. His brothers tried to run. The blade leapt after the eldest, cutting him down from behind.
Bane, drawing strength from the horror of their deaths, rose to his feet, coming into view like an apparition disgorged from the bowels of the planet.
No!
The father howled, desperately clutching his youngest son to his chest.
Spare this one, my lord!
He begged, tears streaming down his face.
He's the youngest, the last one I have!
Those weak enough to beg for mercy do not deserve it.
Still too weak to even raise his arms, Bane reached out once more with the force, bringing the lightsaber up to hover over his helpless victims. He waited, letting their horror mount, then plunged the burning blade into the young boy's heart. The father clutched the corpse to his breast, his tortured laments echoing across the empty battlefield.
Why? Why did you have to kill them?
Bane feasted on his anguish, gorging himself, feeling the dark side growing stronger in him.
The symptoms of the poison receded enough so that he could raise his arm without the muscles trembling. The lightsaber sprang to his hand. The father cowered before him.
Why did you make me watch? Why did you?
One quick swipe of the lightsaber cut him off, sending the father to the same tragic fate as his sons.
Chapter 26.
Lord Hoth tossed and turned, unable to sleep. The creaking of his cot joined the whining buzz of the blood-sucking insect swarms that followed his army wherever they made camp. The noise was compounded by the whirring hum of small-winged nightbirds swooping in to feast on the insects that feasted on his soldiers. The result was a shrill, maddening cacophony that hovered on the edges of hearing. But it wasn't the noises that were keeping him awake, or the unrelenting heat that left him with a constant sheen of sweat on his brow, even at night. It wasn't the military strategies and battle plans constantly running through his mind. It wasn't any one of these things, but rather the sum of all of them together, and the fact that there seemed to be no end in sight to this blasted, cursed war. Minor annoyances that had been tolerable during the first months on Rusan had been magnified by frustration and futility into unbearable torments. With an angry growl, he cast aside the thin blanket he slept under, tossing it into the far corner of his tent. He swung his legs over the side and sat up on the edge of the cot, leaning forward with his elbows on his knees and his head clasped between his hands. For 2 standard years, he'd waged his campaign against the Brotherhood of Darkness here on Rusan. In the beginning, many Jedi had rallied to his side, and many Jedi had died. Too many. Under Lord Hoth's command, they'd sacrificed themselves, offering up their own lives for the sake of a greater cause. Yet now, after 6 major battles... not to mention countless skirmishes, raids, minor clashes, and indecisive engagements, nothing had been decided. The blood of thousands stained his hands, yet he was no closer to his goal. Frustration was beginning to give way to despair. Morale was the lowest it had ever been. Many of the soldiers grumbled that Farfalla was right. The general had let Rusan become his mad obsession and was leading them to their doom. Hoth no longer even had the strength to argue with them. Sometimes he felt as if he'd forgotten the reasons he'd come here in the first place. Once, there may have been virtue in this war, but such nobility had long since been stripped away. Now he fought for revenge in the name of those Jedi who'd fallen. He fought out of hatred of the dark side and what it stood for. He fought out of pride and a refusal to admit defeat. But most of all, he fought simply because he no longer knew anything else. Yet if he gave up now, would it make any difference? If he ordered his troops to retreat, to evacuate the planet in Farfalla's ships, would anything change? If he stepped aside and left the burden of battling the Sith here on Rusan or elsewhere in the galaxy to another, would he finally find peace? Or would he simply be betraying all those who'd believed in him? To disband the Army of Light now, while the Brotherhood of Darkness still existed, dishonored the memory of all those who'd perished in the conflict. To press on meant many more would surely die, and he himself might be lost to the light forever. He lay back down and closed his eyes again, but sleep would not come. "When all the options are wrong," he muttered to himself in the darkness, "what does it matter which one I choose?" "When the way before you is not clear," an ethereal voice answered, "let your actions be guided by the wisdom of the Force." Hoth snapped his head up to peer through the darkness of the tent. A figure was just barely visible in the shadows, standing on the other side. "Pernikar!" he exclaimed, then suddenly asked, "Is this real? Or am I actually sound asleep in my cot, and all this nothing but a dream?" "A dream is only another kind of reality," Pernikar said, with an amused shake of his head. He crossed the tent slowly, moving closer. As he approached, Hoth realized he could actually see through him. The apparition settled itself on the cot. The springs didn't creak. It was as if he had no weight or substance at all. This had to be a dream, Hoth realized, but he didn't want to wake. Instead, he clung desperately to the chance to see his old friend again, even if it was just an illusion conjured up by his own mind. "I've missed you," he said. "Your counsel, your wisdom, I need them now more than ever." "You were not so eager to listen to me when I was alive," the Pernikar of his dream replied, striking at the most secret guilt and regrets buried deep in Hoth's subconscious.
There was much you could have learned from me.
A funny thought struck the general.
Was I your Padawan all this time, Master Pernikar? So young and foolish that I didn't even know you were trying to instruct me in the ways of the Force?
Pernikar laughed lightly.
No, General. Neither one of us is young, though we both have had more than our share of foolish moments.
Hoth nodded somberly. For a moment he said nothing, just enjoying Pernikar's presence once again, even if he was only here in spirit. Then, knowing there must be some purpose to this elaborate charade his subconscious had created for him, he asked,
"Why have you come?" "The Army of Light is an instrument of good and justice. You fear you may have lost your way, but look to the Force, and you will know what you must do to find it again."
"You make it sound so simple,"
Hoth said with a slight shake of his head.
"Have I really fallen so far that I can't even remember the most basic teachings of our order?"
"There is no shame in falling,"
Pernikar said, standing up.
"There is only shame if you refuse to rise once again."
Hoth sighed heavily.
"I know what I must do, but I lack the tools to do it. My troops are on the verge of collapse, exhausted and outnumbered, and the other Jedi no longer believe in our cause."
"Farfalla still does. Though you had your differences, he was always loyal."
"I think I've driven Farfalla away for good,"
Hoth admitted.
"He wants nothing more to do with the Army of Light."
"Then why are his ships still in orbit?"
"You drove him away with your anger, and he fears you may have fallen to the dark side. Show him this is not so, and he will follow you again."
Pernikar took a step back. Hoth could sense himself beginning the slow climb to consciousness again. He could have fought against it. He could have struggled to stay in the dream world, but there was work to be done.
"Goodbye, old friend,"
he whispered. Slowly his eyes opened, revealing the waking world and the empty darkness of his tent.
"Goodbye."
Sleep did not return to him that night. Instead, he thought long and hard about what Pernikar had said to him in his dream. Pernikar had always been the one he'd turned to in times of confusion and trouble. It made sense that his mind would conjure up the image of his dearest friend to set him on the proper path again. He knew what he had to do. He would swallow his pride and ask Farfalla's forgiveness. They had to set aside their personal differences for the sake of the Jedi. First thing in the morning, he emerged from his tent, determined to send an envoy to Farfalla. But to his surprise, he found that one of Farfalla's people had come to speak with him. "I wondered if I'd made this trip in vain," the messenger admitted once Lord Hoth had welcomed her into his tent. "I was afraid you would refuse to even see me."
"Had you come a day earlier, you probably would have been right," he confessed. "Last night, I had a revelation that changed things."
"I guess we're lucky I came today, then," she replied, with a cordial tilt of her head.
"Yes, lucky,"
he muttered, though part of him believed the timing of the dream had nothing to do with luck at all. Truly, the Force was a powerful and mysterious ally. Bane could still feel the poison in his system as he drove the landcrawler across Ambria's vast and empty plains. The rumble of the engine couldn't quite drown out the rattle and clank of the junk piled in the back. The clatter kept him from pushing the memories of the vehicle's previous owners completely from his mind, but he felt no remorse over their deaths. He'd left their bodies lying where they'd fallen, in the midst of the battlefield, where they'd gathered their prizes. Their deaths had given him the strength to press on, but already the surge of power he'd felt was fading. He had the strength to keep the Synox at bay for a few more hours, but he needed to find a permanent cure. He needed to find Kalib. If he could reach the healer, there was still hope. But the man's dwelling was still many kilometers away. It was only a matter of time until his body succumbed to the paralysis and his mind was swallowed by the fevered madness brought on by the toxin. For now, though, his anger allowed him to keep his thoughts clear. He wasn't angry at Githany. She had only acted as a servant of the dark side should. His rage was directed inward, toward his own weakness and misplaced arrogance. He should have anticipated the true depth of her cunning. Instead, he had let her poison him. And if he died now, his great revelation, the rule of two, the salvation of the Sith, would end with him. Kalib felt the Landcrawler's approach long before he saw or heard it. It was like a storm on the wind, a black sky rushing in to cover the sun. When the vehicle rolled to a stop before his hut, he was already sitting outside waiting for it. The man who climbed out was large and muscular, a sharp contrast with Kalib's own thin and wiry frame. He wore dark clothing, and a hook-handled lightsaber dangled from his belt. His skin was gray as ash, and his features were twisted into an expression of cruelty and contempt. Even were he not sensitive to the ways of the Force, it wouldn't have been hard for Kalib to recognize him as a servant of the dark side. What he might not have sensed was how powerful this grim visitor truly was. But Kalib had dealt with powerful men and women before. Jedi and Sith alike had come to him in the past, and he'd turned them all away. He was a servant of the common people, those who could not help themselves. He wanted no part of the war between light and darkness. The man began walking toward him, moving stiffly. The foul stench of poison wafted out from the dying Sith's pores, smothering the scent of the boiling soup hanging over Kalib's fire. Jabbing a stick into the coals to stir up more heat, Kalib now understood his visitor's unnatural complexion. The effects of Synox were unmistakable. He figured the doomed man had at most a day before he died. He didn't speak until the man stood directly above him, looming like the specter of death itself.
"There is venom in your body," Kalib said placidly. "You've come for the cure," he continued. "I will not give it to you."
The man didn't speak, not surprising given his state. The poison would have left his tongue cracked and swollen, his mouth parched and blistered. But he didn't need words to convey his message as his hand dropped to the hilt of his lightsaber.
"I'm not afraid to die," Kalib said, with no change in his voice. "You may torture me if you want," he added. "Pain means nothing to me."
To prove his point, he plunged his hand into the bubbling cauldron. The scent of seared flesh mingled with the smells of soup and poison. His expression never changed, even as he withdrew his hand and held it up to show the scalded flesh. He saw doubt and confusion in the newcomer's eyes, a look he'd witnessed many times before. In the past, his stoicism had served him well, usually thwarting the plans of those Sith or Jedi who'd sought him out for one reason or another. They couldn't understand him, and that was how he wanted it. He cared nothing for their war or what either side valued. In fact, there was only one thing he cared about in all the galaxy, and this performance was his only hope of protecting it from the monster standing above him. The implacable man before him puzzled Bane. His only hope for survival had just been denied him, and he wasn't sure what he could do about it. He could sense the power in this man, but it wasn't the power of either the dark side or the light. It wasn't even the power of the Force in any normal sense of the word. He drew his strength from ground and stone, mountain and forest, the land and the sky. Despite this difference, Bane could sense that the man's power was formidable in its own way. Bane found its strangeness disturbing, unsettling. Was it possible he was actually going to lose this battle of wills? Was it possible this simple man, a man with only the faintest flicker of the Force inside him, was actually able to defy a Dark Lord of the Sith? Had the healer's mind been weak, Bane could have simply compelled him to do his bidding, but his will was as unyielding as the black iron of the pot he'd plunged his hand into. He had demonstrated that pain and threat of death would be ineffective tools in convincing him to change his mind as well. Even now, Bane could sense his mind building up walls to block out the pain, burying it so deep it almost seemed to disappear. And there was something else he was burying as well. Something he was desperately trying to keep Bane from uncovering. Bane's eyes narrowed as he recognized what it was. He was trying to hide the presence of another, shielding whoever it was from the Dark Lord's hazy, fevered perceptions. He turned his attention to the healer's small ramshackle hut. The man made no move to stop him. In fact, he had no reaction at all. The door was blocked by nothing but a long curtain that flowed gently in the breeze. Bane stepped forward and flipped it aside to reveal a small ramshackle room. A young girl, her eyes wide with terror, huddled silently against the far wall. A grim smile of relief touched the corners of Bane's lips as he realized the truth. Kalib had a weakness after all. He cared about something. All his strength of will was useless because of this one failing. And Bane was not above exploiting it to get what he needed. With a single mental command, he swept the terrified girl up into the air, carrying her out to suspend her upside down above the healer's boiling pot. Kalib leapt to his feet, showing real emotion for the first time. He reached out to her, then pulled his hand back, his eyes flicking between his daughter and the man who literally held her life in his grasp.
"Daddy,"
she whimpered.
"Help me."
The man's head dropped in defeat.
"All right," he said. "You win. You will have your cure."
The healing ritual lasted all through the night and into the next day. Kalib drew on all manner of herbs and roots, some cooked in the boiling waters of his pot, others ground up into paste, still others placed directly on Bane's swollen tongue. Throughout the entire process, Bane was wary, ready to unleash his vengeance against the healer's child, should the man try to betray him. But as the hours went by, he slowly felt the Synox leeching from his body, drawn out by the medicines. By evening of the next day, all traces of the poison were gone. Bane returned to his camp and packed up. A few hours later, he was ready to lift off and leave Ambria behind. After the completion of the healing ritual, he'd briefly considered slaying both father and daughter for the crime of seeing him in his moment of weakness. But those were the thoughts of a man blinded by his own arrogance. His recent encounter with Githany had shown him the dangers of that path. Neither Kalib nor his daughter presented any threat to him or his goals. And Kalib had a skill he might one day need again. For all its power, the dark side was weak in the healing arts. So he had let them live. There was no purpose or advantage in their deaths. Killing without reason or gain was a petty pleasure of sadistic fools. And Bane was determined, as he punched the coordinates for Rusan into the nav computer, to cleanse the dark side of fools. Chapter 27. When the Volsan arrived at Rusan, Bane was surprised to find both Sith and Jedi fleets in the system. The Sith had formed a blockade around the planet, obviously trying to prevent the Jedi from bringing reinforcements to their fellows on the surface. Yet to Bane's eye, it appeared that the Jedi were making no effort to run the blockade. Their ships seemed content to wait, lurking just beyond the range of enemy fire. And the Sith couldn't attack without breaking formation and exposing their lines. The result was a tense stalemate, with neither side willing to make the first move. Despite the blockade, Bane was able to land his ship on Rusan without drawing the attention of either fleet. The Jedi weren't concerned with ships going to the planet.
and the Sith were patrolling in patterns designed to guard against large-scale incursions. The blockade was meant to stop troop transports, supply ships, and their escorts. It was all but useless against a single scout vessel or fighter. His sensors picked up the Sith encampment soon after he breached the atmosphere, and he brought the Valsin in on the far side of the world. The blockade patrols hadn't spotted him, and he'd disabled the ship's beacon before leaving Lihon. Nobody knew he was here. He planned to keep it that way for a while longer. He set the ship down in the cover of a small range of foothills several kilometers from the encampment. He would draw less attention approaching on foot, and he wanted to keep the Valsin's location secret in case he needed it to make a quick escape. He disembarked and began the long hike to meet up with Khan and his fellow Sith. The feel of this planet was far different from any of the others he'd been on. This was a tired world, weary and spent with the endless wars being waged across its surface. There was a malaise in the air, like some infectious disease of mind and spirit. The Force was strong on Rusan, inevitable given the vast numbers of Sith and Jedi there, yet he sensed it was in turmoil, a maelstrom of confusion and conflict. Neither the dark nor light held sway. Instead, they collided and fused, becoming an obscene, indecisive gray. Far to the east, he could see the edges of Rusan's great forests. He could sense the Jedi hiding deep within them, though they used a light side to mask their exact location. The Sith encampment was to the west, several kilometers away from the forest's borders. Between them stretched a vast panorama of gently rolling hills and plains, the site of all the major battles that had been fought on Rusan so far. The constant fighting had been punctuated by 6 full-scale engagements, battles where each side had brought its full strength to bear in an effort to wipe out the enemy, or at least drive them from the world. 3 times, Hoth and the Army of Light had seized the upper hand. The other 3 had gone to Khan and his Brotherhood. Yet none of the victories had been decisive enough to bring an end to the war. From the pungent smell of death, Bane suspected some smaller confrontation had been recently fought over this territory as well. His suspicions were confirmed when he crested a rise and came across a scene of slaughter. It was hard to tell who had won. Bodies clad in the garb of each side were everywhere, intermingled, as if the combatants had remained locked together in hatred long after they'd all been slain. Most of the dead were likely to be followers of the Jedi or minions of the Sith, rather than actual Jedi Knights or members of the Brotherhood, though he noticed dark Sith robes on a handful of the bodies. Hovering above the killing field were the Bouncers, a unique species native to Rusan. They were at least 6, spherical in shape and of various sizes, with most being between 1 and 2 meters across. Their round bodies were covered with thick green fur, as were the fin-like appendages protruding from their sides, and the long ribbon-like tails that streamed out behind them. They had no visible facial features other than dark, lidless eyes. Reports indicated they were sentient, yet to Bane they looked like animals, scavenging the remains of the battle. As he approached, he realized they were communicating, though they possessed no mouths. Somehow, they were projecting mental images of succor and comfort, as if they sought to heal the wounds of the scarred land beneath them. They scattered at Bane's approach, whisking themselves away like a bizarre school of fish, capable of swimming through the skies. As he drew nearer, he realized they'd been congregating over one of the fallen. The human man was not quite dead, though the gaping wound in his gut gave stark evidence that he wouldn't live to see the night. He wore the robes of the Sith, and the shattered remains of a lightsaber's hilt lay near his outstretched hand. Bane recognized him as one of the lesser students from the Academy on Korriban. So weak in the dark side, it wasn't even worth the bother of learning his name. Yet he knew Bane. With a groan, the man rolled onto his back and hauled himself up to a sitting position, leaning his head and shoulders against the nearby stone. His eyes, glazed and dilated, cleared momentarily and came into focus.
"Lord Bane," he gasped. "Khan told us you were dead."
There was no point in replying, so Bane said nothing.
You missed the fight,
the man mumbled, the words hard to hear through the choking bubbles of blood welling up in his throat. A coughing fit cut off what he was going to say next. He was too weak to even bring up his hand to cover his mouth as he spewed red spots over Bane's dark boots.
The battle was glorious,
he finally croaked out.
It's an honor to fall in such a splendid battle.
Bane laughed loudly, the only appropriate response to such ridiculous stupidity.
Glory means nothing for the dead, he said,
though it wasn't clear if the man could even hear him in his fevered state. He turned to go, then paused when he felt a feeble tug on his heel.
Help me, Lord Bane.
Lifting his boot free of the clutching hand, Bane answered,
My name is Darth Bane.
There was a sickening crunch as his boot slammed down, grinding the man's skull into the rocks, propping him up. His body convulsed once, then lay still. The purging of the Sith had begun. Lord Khan lay on his back on a small cot in his tent, eyes closed, gently massaging his temples. The strain of keeping his followers united in a common cause was taking a heavy toll, and his head constantly pulsed with a dull and relentless ache. Despite the success in recent battles with the Jedi on Rusan, the mood in the Sith camp was tense. They had been on Rusan too long, far too long, and reports kept filtering in of Republic victories in distant systems. Even with his ability to manipulate and influence the minds of the other Dark Lords, it was becoming more and more difficult to keep the Brotherhood focused on their battle against the Army of Light. He knew there was one sure way to end the war, and end it quickly. The Thought Bomb. He'd spent many nights wondering if he dared to use it. If they lured the Jedi in and unleashed the Thought Bomb, its blast would completely obliterate their enemies. But would the combined will of the Brotherhood be strong enough to survive such power? Or would they get swept up in the backlash of the explosion? Time and again he dismissed it as too dangerous, a weapon so terrible that even he, a Dark Lord of the Sith, was afraid to use it. Yet each time he considered it for a few moments longer before backing away from the abyss. A sound outside the tent caused him to open his eyes and sit up sharply. A second later, Githany, now seen by many as his right hand, poked her head in.
They're ready for you, Lord Khan.
He nodded and rose to his feet, taking a second to calm and compose himself. If he showed any weakness, the others might turn against him. He couldn't let that happen. Not now, when they were so close to ultimate victory. That was why he'd summoned the other Dark Lords. One final gathering to strengthen their resolve and assure their continued loyalty. Githany led the way through the camp, and he followed her to the large tent where the other Sith Lords were waiting for him. He entered with conviction and purpose, projecting an aura of confidence and authority. As was customary whenever he entered a room, those in the assemblage rose to their feet as a sign of respect. There was one, however, who remained seated, arms folded across his thick chest.
Are you too heavy to rise, Lord Kopej?
Githany asked pointedly.
I thought we were all equals in the Brotherhood.
The Twi'lek snarled back, speaking more to Khan than to her. Khan knew he had to tread carefully. This was not the first time Kopej had been the voice of dissent, and many of the others took their cues from him. Unfortunately, he was also one of the most difficult to influence and control.
Equals.
Quite right, Lord Kopej, he said with a weary smile. Remain seated. All of you, we have no need of these pointless formalities. The rest of the group did as he bade and found their seats once more, though it was clear everyone still felt the tension between the two of them. He let a wave of soothing reassurance ripple out across the room as he crossed over to the strategy table.
The war against the Jedi is almost won, he declared. They are on the verge of collapse. They've retreated into the forests, but they are running out of places to hide.
Kopej snorted derisively.
We've heard that refrain one too many times.
It took tremendous effort to maintain his composure, but somehow, Lord Khan managed to reply in a calm, even voice. Anyone who has doubts about our strategy here in Rusan is free to speak, he offered. As has already been pointed out in this meeting, we are all equals in the Brotherhood of Darkness.
It's not just Rusan I'm worried about,
Korpej replied, accepting the bait and rising to his feet.
We've lost ground everywhere else in the galaxy. We had the Republic reeling, but instead of finishing them off, we let them regroup.
Most of our early victories came before the Jedi joined their cause, Khan reminded him. The point of attacking the Republic in the first place was to draw the Jedi out. We wanted to force them into a battle of our choosing. This battle, here on Rusan. Now, we are on the verge of wiping them out. And with the Jedi gone, we can easily reclaim the worlds that have slipped back under the Republic's control. And many more besides. Though Korpej was silent, there were murmurs of agreement from the other Sith Lords. Khan pressed his point even farther.
Once we wipe out the enemy here on Rusan, our armies will sweep across the galaxy virtually unopposed, conquering territory in every sector. We will encircle Coruscant and the other core worlds like a noose, drawing ever tighter until we choke the very life out of the Republic.
There was a roar of approval from the crowd. When Korpej spoke again, even he seemed to have lost some of his hostility.
But victory here is not assured. We may have Hoth's army surrounded and pinned down, but there's a Jedi fleet with hundreds of reinforcements lurking on the edges of this system.
Their reinforcements are on the edge of the system, Khan admitted with a nod, not bothering to deny what every single one of them knew to be fact. Just as they have been for the past week. And that's exactly where they will stay, far away from the surface where they are needed. The bulk of our fleet is in orbit around Rusan itself, and the Jedi lack the numbers or the firepower to break through our blockade. If they can't unite their numbers with those here on the surface, Hoth and his followers will fall. And once we have finished them off, we can mop up the tattered remnants of the Order at our leisure.
Korpej, mollified, sat down with one final comment. Then let's finish Hoth off quickly and get off this blasted rock.
That's exactly the point of this strategy conference, Khan said with a smile, knowing he had once again averted a potential schism in the Brotherhood. We may have lost a few skirmishes here and there, but we are about to win the war.
Githany stepped up and handed him a holomap with the latest data from their reconnaissance drones. He gave her a nod of thanks and unfurled it on the table, then bent down for a closer look.
Our spies indicate Hoth's main camp is located here, he said, jabbing a finger at a heavily wooded section of the map. If we can flush them out of the forest, we might be able to.
He stopped short as a dark shadow fell across the map.
What now?
He demanded, pounding his fist on the table and snapping his head up to find the cause of this latest interruption.
An enormous mountain of a man stood in the doorway, blocking the light streaming in from outside. He was tall and completely bald, with a heavy brow and hard, unforgiving features. He wore the black armor and robes of the Sith, and a hook-handled lightsaber hung at his side. Though he had never met the man before, Lord Khan had heard enough about him to know exactly who he was.
Darth Bane! He exclaimed.
He cast a quick glance in Githany's direction, wondering if she had betrayed him. From the expression on her face, it was obvious she was just as surprised as he was to see their visitor alive and well.
We thought you were dead, he began uncertainly.
How did...
I'm tired,
Bane interrupted.
Do you mind if I sit?
Of course, Khan quickly agreed. Anything for a brother.
The big man sneered as he settled into one of the nearby chairs.
Thank you, brother.
There was something in his tone that put Khan's guard up. What was he doing here? Did he know that Githany had tried to poison him? Did he know Khan had sent her?
Please, continue with your strategy,
Ben urged with a casual wave of his hand. Khan's hackles rose. It was as if he was being given permission to continue, as if Bane was the one in charge. Gritting his teeth, he looked down at the map again and resumed where he'd left off.
As I was saying, the Jedi are hiding in the forests. We can flush them out if we split our numbers. If we deploy our flyers, we can flank their southern lines.
Bah!
Bane spat out, slapping his open palm down hard on the table.
Deploying flyers and flanking armies, he mocked, rising to his feet and thrusting an accusing finger at Khan. You're thinking like a dirt general, not a Sith Lord.
A heavy silence had fallen across the room. Even Khan was left speechless. He could feel all eyes on him, watching intently to see what would happen next. Bane stepped in close, his face just centimeters from Khan's own.
How did you ever find the guts to poison me?
He asked, in a low, menacing whisper.
That wasn't me,
Khan stammered as Bane turned his back on him.
Don't apologize for using cunning and trickery,
the big man admonished, moving over to the strategy table.
I admire you for it. We are Sith, the servants of the dark side,
he continued, bending down to study the troop positions and tactical layout spread out before him.
Now look at this map and think like a Sith. Don't just fight in the forest. Destroy the forest.
It was Githany who finally broke the ensuing silence, asking the question on everyone's mind.
And just how do you propose we do that?
Bane turned back to them with an evil grin.
I can show you.
Night had fallen, but in the lights of the blazing campfires, Bane could see the others scurrying to and fro, making the preparations as he had instructed. When he sensed Githany approaching from behind him, he turned. She was holding a bowl of steaming soup and wore a cautious, uncertain expression. It will be another hour before they are ready to begin this ritual of yours, she said by way of greeting. When he didn't reply, she added, You look tired. I brought you something to restore your strength. He took the bowl from her, but didn't raise it to his lips. He'd discovered the ritual he spoke of while studying Revan's holocron, a way to unite the minds and spirits of the Sith through a single vessel so their strength could be unleashed upon the physical world. In many ways, the process was similar to the one used to fashion a thought bomb from the Force, though this was less powerful than the ritual he'd sent as a peace offering to Khan, and far less dangerous. He realized Githany was still studying him closely, so he tilted his head toward the soup.
Come to poison me again?
He asked. There was just a hint of playful teasing in his voice.
You knew all along, didn't you?
She said.
He shook his head. Not until I tasted the poison on your lips.
She raised a single eyebrow and gave him a coy smile.
But you came back for a second helping. And a third.
Poison should not harm a Dark Lord,
he told her. Then he admitted,
Yet it almost killed me.
He paused, but she didn't say anything.
There are too many Sith Lords in the Brotherhood, he went on. Too many who are weak in the dark side. Khan doesn't understand this.
Khan's afraid you've come back to take over the Brotherhood. After a moment, she added, I think he's right.
Not take over, he thought, but obliterate.
He didn't bother to correct her, though. It wasn't the time yet. He still needed further proof that she was the right one to become his apprentice.
Two there should be, no more, no less. One to embody the power, the other to crave it.
It was a choice he wasn't about to rush into.
I can show you the true power of the dark side, Githany. Power beyond what any of these others can even imagine,
he said.
Teach me,
she breathed.
I want to learn. You can show me everything. After. after you've taken Khan's place as leader of the Brotherhood. He couldn't help but wonder if she was still trying to manipulate him. Did she want to play him and Khan against each other? Or was she looking for him to usurp Khan as proof of his newfound strength?
No, he admitted. She still doesn't understand that the entire Sith Order must be torn apart and rebuilt from scratch. Maybe she won't ever understand.
Tell me something, he said. Was it your idea to poison me, or Khan's?
With a slight laugh, she ducked beneath his arm, holding the bowl of soup, and came up close against his chest, looking right up into his eyes.
It was my idea, she confessed. But I was careful to make sure Khan thought it was his.
There might be hope for her yet, Bane thought.
I know I made a mistake before,
she continued, moving away from him. I should have gone with you when you left Korriban. I didn't realize what you were after. I didn't understand the secrets you were seeking. But I understand them now. You are the true leader of the Sith, Bane. I'll follow you from now on. And so will the rest of the Brotherhood, after we use your ritual to destroy the Jedi.
Yes, he agreed,
keeping his voice carefully neutral and taking a sip of the steaming soup.
After we've destroyed the Jedi.
Bane knew they couldn't really destroy the Jedi. Not here on Rusan. Not like this. Somehow, the Jedi would survive. No ordinary war could completely eliminate the servants of the light. Only the tools of the dark side, cunning, secrecy, treachery, betrayal, could do that. The same tools he would use to wipe out the entire Brotherhood of Darkness. Beginning with the ritual tonight.
Chapter 28. Khan, Githany, and the rest of the Dark Lords had gathered atop a barren plateau overlooking the vast forests where Hoth and his army were hiding. They had come on their flyers, short-range, single-person, airborne vehicles front-mounted with heavy blaster guns. The flyers were parked at the edge of the plateau, 50 meters away from where the Sith sat in a loose circle. The ritual had begun. They were communing with the Force, all of them slipping into a meditative trance as one. Their minds drifted deeper and deeper into the well of power contained within each individual, drawing on their strength and combining it through a single conduit. Bane stood in the center of the circle, urging them on. Touch the dark side. The dark side is one, indivisible. The night sky filled with dark clouds and a fierce wind swirled across the plateau, tearing at the cloaks and capes of the Sith. The air shook with the thunder and crackle of a mounting electrical storm. Bolts of blue-white lightning arced through the air, and the temperature suddenly dropped.
Give yourself over to the dark side. Let it surround you, engulf you, devour you.
The Brotherhood slipped deeper into the collective trance, barely even aware of the storm now raging about their physical selves. Bane stood at the eye of the storm, drawing the bolts of lightning into himself, feeding on them. He felt his strength surge as he channeled and focused the dark side from the others. This is how it should be. All the power of the Brotherhood in one body. The only way to unleash the full potential of the dark side.
Do you feel invincible? Invulnerable? Immortal?
He had to shout to be heard above the howling wind and thunder. A web of lightning spiraled out from his body, connecting him to each of the other Sith. He shivered, then suddenly went stiff, arms spread out at his sides. Slowly, his rigid body began to rise into the air.
Can you feel it?
He screamed, feeling as if the raw power of the Force roaring through him might rip his very flesh asunder.
Are you ready to kill a world?
There was very little in the galaxy that could scare a man like General Hoff. Yet as he sat looking over the latest situational reports from his scouts, he felt the first glimmers of real fear gnawing away at the base of his skull. The rift between himself and Farfalla had been mended, but now there was no way to get the reinforcements down to Rusan's surface. Small messenger ships with a crew of one or two had been able to slip past the Sith blockade undetected, though on occasion even these vessels had been spotted and destroyed. Anything larger would never make it. But his fear was more than the result of his frustration at having help so near, yet so impossibly far away. There was something sinister in the air, something evil. Suddenly, an image leapt unbidden to his mind, a premonition of death and destruction. He sprang to his feet and ran from his tent. Even though it was the middle of the night, he was only mildly surprised to see that most of the rest of the camp was up and about. They had felt it too. Something coming for them. Coming fast. They were looking to him for leadership, waiting for him to take command. He did so, with a single, shouted order. Run! The storm rolled down from the plateau and rumbled across the forest. Hundreds of forks of searing lightning shot down from the sky, and the forest erupted. Trees burst into flames, the blaze racing through the branches and spreading out in all directions. The underbrush smoldered, smoked, and ignited, and a wall of fire swept across the planet's surface. The inferno consumed everything in its path. Heat and fire. There was nothing else in Bane's world. It was as if he had become the storm itself. He could see the world before him, swallowed up in red and orange and reduced in seconds to ash and embers by the unchained fury of the dark side. It was glorious. And then suddenly it was gone. There was a jarring thump as his body dropped from where it had been hovering 5 meters above the ground. For several seconds, he was completely disoriented, unable to figure out what happened. Then he understood. The connection had been broken. He rose to his feet slowly, uncertain of his balance. All around him were the forms of the Sith, no longer kneeling in meditation, but collapsed or rolling on the ground, their minds reeling from the sudden end to the joining ritual. One by one, they also regained their composure and stood, most looking as confused as Bane had been only seconds before. Then he noticed Lord Khan standing off to the side, over by the fires. "What happened?" Bane demanded angrily. "Why did you stop?" "Your plan worked," Khan replied curtly. "The forest is destroyed. The Jedi have fled to open ground. They are exposed, vulnerable. Now we go to finish them off." Khan had broken the connection, and somehow he'd managed to drag the others out along with him, as if he had some hold over their minds. Perhaps he does, Bane thought. Further proof that they all had to be destroyed if the Sith were to be cleansed. As the others regained their senses, Khan was shouting out orders and battle plans. "The fire flushed the Jedi out into the open. We can mow them down from the sky. Hurry!" They jumped at his command, rushing to their waiting vehicles and taking to the sky with battle cries and shouts of triumph. "Come on, Bane," Githany said, rushing past him. "Let's join them!" He grabbed her arm, pulling her up short. "Khan is still trying to win this war through blasters and armies," he said. "That is not the way of the dark side." "It's more fun this way," she said, the excitement obvious in her voice. She shook free of his grasp. As he watched her run to join the others, he realized that she had been corrupted by the teachings of Cordis and the Academy on Korriban. Despite her promise to follow Bane, she couldn't see beyond the Brotherhood and its limitations. She was tainted, unfit to be his apprentice. She would have to die with all the others. There was the faintest hint of regret as he made the decision, but the regret was hollow, the echo of a feeling,
the last vestiges of an emotion. He snuffed it out quickly, knowing it could only make him weak.
"You frighten us, Bane,"
a voice said from behind. He turned to see Kopej, studying him carefully.
"When we were focusing the force through you, it felt as if you had your teeth on our throats."
But Twilek continued,
"As if you were trying to suck us dry."
"The power of the dark side is strongest if it is concentrated in one vessel," Bane replied, "not spread out among many. I did it for the sake of the dark side." Kopej shook his head and climbed onto his flyer.
"Well, we know you weren't doing it for us."
Bane watched him soar off. Then he climbed into his own flyer. But instead of following Khan to the battle, he set a course back to the Sith camp. The first phase of his plan to destroy the Brotherhood was complete. When he arrived back at the camp 20 minutes later, he wasn't surprised to find it completely deserted. All the Dark Lords had been on the plateau for the ritual, and they had all flown off in Khan's wake to face the suddenly vulnerable Jedi. The soldiers, servants, and followers who made up the bulk of the Sith army had originally been left behind at the camp, but they'd since received calmed orders from Khan and the others to join them at the battlefield. Bane brought his flyer in for a landing in the heart of the camp, right beside Lord Khan's tent. He killed the engine and was surprised to hear the distant whine of another flyer approaching. He looked up, curious. When it swooped in low, he recognized the rider. The vehicle was bearing down on him in a direct line. Bane let his hand drop to his lightsaber, ready to unclip it at a moment's notice. The force welled up within him, prepared to throw up a protective shield if the flyer's front-mounted blaster should open fire. But the flyer didn't attack. Instead, it swooped a few meters over his head, banked sharply, and then came in for a landing beside his own.
"You have no need of your weapon," Cordis said as he dismounted. "I've come with an offer."
Realizing there was no immediate threat, Bane let his hand drop back to his side.
"An offer? What could you possibly have to offer me?"
"My allegiance,"
Cordis said, dropping to one knee. Bane stared down at him, his expression a mixture of horror, amusement, and contempt.
"Why would you give your allegiance to me?"
he asked.
"And why should I even want it?"
Cordis rose slowly to his feet, a cunning smile on his lips.
"I am not blind, Lord Bane. I see you speaking with Githany. I see how you are undermining Khan. I know the real reason you have come to Rusan."
Perplexed, Bane wondered if it was possible that Cordis, the founder of the Academy on Korriban, the most ardent proponent of all that was wrong with the Sith, had finally seen the truth.
"What exactly are you proposing?"
he asked through clenched teeth.
"I know what happened to Cassim. He sided with Khan against you. He paid for that decision with his life. I am not so foolish. I know you're here to take over the Brotherhood," he declared. "I believe you will succeed, and I want to help you."
"You want to help me take over the Brotherhood?"
Bane laughed. Cordis was as blind and misguided as the rest of them.
"Replace one leader with another, and you and the rest of the Brotherhood continue on as before. That's your brilliant plan."
"I can prove quite useful to you, Lord Bane,"
Cordis insisted.
"Many of the Brotherhood are former students of my academy. They still look to me for wisdom and guidance."
"And therein lies the problem."
Bane lashed out with the dark side, seizing Cordis in an immobilizing, crushing grip. His opponent tried to protect himself, throwing up a field to deflect the incoming assault. But Bane's attack tore through the pitiful defense, wiping it away as if it hadn't even been there. There was a strangled cry of pain from Cordis as the force tightened around him and lifted him up from the ground.
"Your wisdom has destroyed our order.
Bane explained casually, watching as Korda struggled helplessly above him. You have polluted the minds of your followers. You and Khan have led them down the path of ruin.
I don't understand!
Cordis gasped, barely able to speak as the breath was squeezed inexorably from his lungs.
That has always